wide world. It's called Talking Animals, of course, aptly titled. And your host is Duncan Strauss. That's coming up next. So don't go anywhere. This has been the Serena Sharp Show, Hot Topics You Really Care About.
It's just about 9 o'clock straight up, 88.9 FM, KUCI, in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents.
Wonder if you know what you see, what you get.
Everybody knows that just how it goes when you're loving. Loving all them buzzes.
Jim White with a song called Buzzards of Love as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine and streaming live on the internet, of course, at KUCI.org and the whole enterprise is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. Home, by the way, of the Anteaters. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. You can also instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name, not surprisingly perhaps, is Talking Animals. Other slightly less immediate ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And, of course, checking out our website, talkinganimals.net. Again, make no mistake, that's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. We're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting the aforementioned nifty website, talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. How do you like them apples, folks? Clearly the heart of the program, as you can see when you do visit, if you haven't already, is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Carol Clancy from Oasis de los Gatos, a sanctuary for feral cats, primarily, located in Apache Junction, Arizona. Carol also has some strong ideas and time-tested techniques for taming feral cats. It's pretty interesting. So we'll hear all about this when Carol Clancy joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, of course, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, let's say you have a benefit or some other cool fundraiser that's animal-related or for an animal organization, bring it on. Observations, of course, any news stories that you might have spotted in the animal world, all of that and more would be most welcome. Of course, you can call that in again at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, or again, IM us. By way of AOL Instant Messenger, screen name is Talking Animals. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, and sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And, with any luck, to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. All right, then. Having said that, that's right. Wait for it. Here we go. Hold on. That's right. Talk turkey. As it were. All right, produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's jump right in. This is sort of a biggie in a sense from Delaware. Dateline, Newark, Delaware, in fact. Like a mutant blob in a bad horror movie, an oil slick, first thought to be relatively small, has grown bigger and more menacing over the past week, oozing its way down both banks of the Delaware River. When the Greek tanker Athos 1 began leaking heavy Venezuelan crude into the river the night of November 26, it appeared to be a manageable spill confined to a riverside terminal, just 30,000 gallons, according to estimates. But authorities now warn that it could be as much as 473,500 gallons, a gooey mess that has spread to 70 miles of shoreline across three states. Investigators are trying to determine whether a gash and a puncture in the ship's hull were caused by an 11-ton, 13-foot-wide propeller that fell off a dredge owned by the Army Corps of Engineers in April and was left on the river bottom. The muck has killed birds, fish, and turtles. It has shut down a nuclear plant and threatened a dozen freshwater streams and tributaries. It has slid past a pristine nature reserve and spread to within 3 miles of drinking water intakes for Philadelphia and southern New Jersey. Goes on from there, but of course, maybe predictably, there's a couple pictures that ran with this. This was in the LA Times over the weekend. And there's one picture of a Canada goose, oil-covered, being cleaned by a rescue worker. So, that same center has treated 86 birds, including mallards, cormorants, herons, hoots, and seagulls. And so far, of those, 69 are still alive. So, could be worse, but never good for our animal friends when there's an oil spill. And closer to home, and also not gigantically upbeat, but it does solve a mystery sort of been bedeviling some local people, including Dennis Kelly, who we had on the show here on Talking Animals a month or so ago. And that's that for a while there were two dolphins in the sort of Back Bay area, Pearson's Port, I think it's called, and Upper Newport Bay. Yeah, Pearson's Port. And then there was only one. And then, recently, they were reporting that that one seemed to disappear. Well, unfortunately, a dolphin, this is another story from the LA Times, a dolphin believed to be the one that delighted marine biology students with its frequent appearances off Pearson's Port in Upper Newport Bay before vanishing days ago has been found dead on the beach on Lido Island, Orange Coast College students Molly Kent said Friday. Kent and fellow student Bridget Ross have been watching a lone dolphin since September, visiting the bridge between Bayside and Dover Drives to record and videotape its movements as part of Professor Dennis Kelly's Coastal Dolphin Survey Project. Kelly got a call Thursday about the dead dolphin. On Friday, had it brought to his lab where students will try to determine why the mammal died, Ross said. The dolphin, which they sometimes call Dex, became a point of interest when it lagged behind after nearly all the other dolphins had left the bay at the end of the summer. We had been watching him. He looked very healthy and active. He got out of the way of boats and was up and down diving for fish, Kent recalled. So, students suspect that the dead dolphin might be Dex, Kent said, because it was the only dolphin that had stayed behind. Others had been spotted only sporadically. So, that's too bad. I mean, that was kind of a neat story, just because it was so unusual to have a 1.2 dolphins kind of frolicking just under the bridge there, where there's, you know, traffic and restaurants and people and other things. And so, rest in peace, Dex, if it is indeed you. On a more rock and roll front, but still very much tied to the purview, if I may use that word, talking animals, and I hope I can. Wanted to mention that Most Precious Blood and Remembering Never, two bands that are playing together in a tour sponsored by PETA, will be appearing on December 10th at Chain Reaction in Anaheim. And both these bands are staunch vegans and regularly advocate for animal rights, and they distribute literature at shows and include the message in their lyrics. So they've worked with PETA regularly, so fortunately they alerted us to this a little too late to try to work them into a show before, or this show even, before their concert locally. But I hope to speak with one of both bands somewhere along the line, because one of the things that is sort of interesting is that, that both these bands, I think, are sort of hardcore punk bands. They seem to be generally way out in front of all the other bands and genres in raising money and awareness for animal rights issues, vegan approaches, and other things. So hopefully we'll speak to someone from Most Precious Blood and or Remembering Never, playing local here, and I'm in a chain reaction on December 10th. Want to jump right in now to our mid news animal quiz. I think you know how this works. It's a true-false question, and typically the first person who calls in with the correct answer gets their choice of a prize. And those prizes range from the new DVD from Triumph the Insult Comic Dog to books and CDs, pretty cool ones from some of our guests, including, speaking of PETA, Liberation, which is a CD by a bunch of bands. Good Charlotte, The Used, Los Desparacitos. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm just throwing my memory. But, probably a dozen or so bands. So we have that as a prize. We've got T-shirts from various animal organizations. We've got the cat toys, dog collars, umbrellas, cool stuff, Meatless Meal, a book called Meatless Meals for Working People, on and on. But also, today, you like David Allan Coe? Do you? Well, if you do, might be able to set up with a pair of tickets to see him locally here at the Galaxy, which is just on Harbor Boulevard in sort of Costa Mesa. Not far, by the way, from the Talking Animals headquarters, like 5 minutes. But at any rate, the show is December 18th. And so I want to offer at least one of those pairs. And actually, I might even have two people calling in. I might even offer a pair to each one. If you get the question correct, of course. That's pivotal. So, and here is that question. It's true false, so my God, even if you're barely awake and not paying attention, you got a 50-50 chance. All right, so here we go. True or false, most lipstick contains fish scales. Most lipstick contains fish scales. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, or again, you can IM us by way of AOL Instant Messenger. Talking Animals is the screen name. And by any means necessary, I suppose, you can give us your answer. And if you do, you have your choice of prizes, including a pair of tickets to David Allen Coe at the Galaxy on December 18th. How about them? You know what? All right, cool. Just a quick note here. A few days ago, the LA Times ran an editorial that sort of addressed not only the Ruby, the elephant situation, which we've talked about dozens of times now here on Talking Animals, but other situations with elephants at zoos, or elephants, you know, no longer going to be at zoos, like the Detroit Zoo and others who've just decided you can't properly and humanely exhibit elephants at zoos. I was kind of surprised. I mean, editorials are just opinions, so, you know, God bless everybody, anybody who writes them, but it was a little ill-conceived and sort of, you know, just didn't really seem to have any understanding of the situation when it came to elephants, and just sort of said, you know, what's next, and then they won't have rhinos or whatever. I mean, it just really betrayed no understanding of even the basics. I mean, you wouldn't have to be an animal expert or an animal lover to know a bit more than whoever wrote this editorial. So not surprisingly, it elicited a flood of letters, and some of those ran in yesterday's paper, including by the lead letter that they ran yesterday. It was from Les Schobert, the really cool guy that we had on our show a few months ago now, who has run and curated zoos for 30 years and has a particular interest and expertise in elephants. We talked a lot about that when he was on the show. So I'm just going to read at least some of his letter, because I thought it was really well done. And again, this issue just will not go away, partly because, as we've also talked about, the organization AZA, the Association for Zoos and Aquariums, that's sort of the governing body of most zoos in the U.S., and maybe beyond even, won't really go along with this plan of trying to move elephants to sanctuaries and elsewhere where they can actually have, you know, a decent quality of life, where they can be with other elephants, where they can have space to roam, where they can not have be on concrete or be in chains and have all the leg and foot problems that they have. So even, even though there seemed to be good news from the Detroit Zoo when they said, hey, you know, we can't do this, the AZA stepped in their way, and now it's a huge complication because they won't let them do that, or they say you got to send the elephants at least to another zoo. You can't send them to a sanctuary. So anyway, that's a little prelude to this letter, but it's really, this letter is tied again to the editorial that I mentioned that ran, I think, November 30th in the LA Times. So it starts off, as a former zoo curator who worked with elephants for more than 30 years, I find your editorial off the mark. You cannot compare an elephant to a rhino. It's the needs of the species that count. Elephants naturally live within large family groups and are one of the most socially complex animals outside of man. Yet in zoos, they are kept either alone or with only one or two other unrelated elephants, the largest mammal on land. Elephants also require a vast amount of space and exercise to prevent the foot and leg disorders that affect more than 50% of zoo elephants and are prematurely killing them. Unless elephants can be kept in a way that addresses their spatial, social, and psychological needs, there is no ethical basis for keeping them in zoos. Les Schobert, La Quinta. So yay, Les, and there's other, really, to the Times' credit, all the letters they ran basically were taking the editorial to task. So, you know, day late and a dollar short, but at least they, I think, kind of admitted that they really didn't understand what they were saying in that editorial. Yikes, okay, shoot. Well, gosh, I have so many other cool news items, but I think at the point where we need to move on to get into the comedy corner, and then welcome our guest Carol Clancy. So let me just say that, again, if there are ever news stories or announcements of events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@aol.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, animal comedy bits, as you're about to hear momentarily, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@aol.com. And I'm pleased to remind you always, even redundantly, especially redundantly maybe, about the Talking Animals website, We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. That's .net. And sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. But you'll also find somebody who apparently stutters now and again. And archives and synopses of all the shows, assorted photographs and articles, both that we've written and that media types, including the LA Times, have written about us. All kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site again. It's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. Reaching back into the vaults a bit for this one. This is Bill Cosby with a piece called The Story of the Chicken on today's Comedy Corner here at KUCI.
I was thinking the other day, which is really groovy. You have to do that every once in a while. You have to think. You know, just lay up in your bed and just think. When you don't have anything to do, just think. And I started thinking about animals, because to me, they're really groovy because they don't talk or nothing. So I try to get into their brains to see what they're thinking. And I started thinking about the first chicken. Did you ever think about the first chicken? Not who came first, the chicken or the egg, because I really don't care. Because if there was an egg and the chicken came from it, who did the chicken have to learn from? Because when you think about chickens, they don't hang out with other birds. They hang out with the horse, you know, they walk around, how you doing, horse, how's everything? And they walk around with the cow, hey, cow, what's happening, how you doing, you know? And they ain't hanging out with the ducks or the robins or nobody like that. Robin Redbreast, names you learn in elementary school, Robin Redbreast. They're just hanging out with themselves. So I figure the first chicken had to be confused. You know what I mean? Because now, when they were first here, everybody got irked or pregnant. They were all swollen with child. So the chicken's hanging out with the horse and the cow, and they're all irked. And they're just proud, can't wait. The chicken's saying, oh, yeah, yeah, it's going to really be nice, don't you think? All of a sudden, the horse said, and there it was. A colt, you dig? And the colt is standing up, skinny-legged and everything. And and the chicken was really happy, baby. Oh, isn't that cute? It looks just like you. That is. Oh, it's so happy for you. And the cow said, and there's a calf. And the calf. Chicken said, oh, man, it looks just like, got a little bit of the father there. Yes, black and white spots. And oh, it's just got, oh, mine is coming now. And they all look and. The chicken had to be confused. They're looking at an egg. And there was no name for it then. She just looked at it. Oh, my. And the rooster probably was worse than the old girl.
What were you drinking last night?
So I figure out of embarrassment, she sat on it. And tried to hide it. You dig? And felt it cracking. But you got to do some thinking, because the chicken had to be confused. The duck probably came over and explained it to her, because ducks are hip.
All right. That's Bill Cosby with a piece called The Story of the Chicken, taken from his album The Best of Bill Cosby. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM. Broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way right now as we speak. And some of you, perhaps, arrive through our small website, TalkingAnimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. All right, earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Carol Clancy, co-founder of Oasis de los Gatos, a sanctuary for feral cats primarily, located in Apache Junction, Arizona. And Carol also has some really strong, interesting ideas and time-tested techniques for taming feral cats. So we look forward to talking about all of that. So let's remind you all of the phone number to join us, 949-824-5824, as we welcome Carol Clancy here to Talking Animals. Are you there, Carol?
Yes.
Great. Well, thanks.
Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. And we want to hear, of course, all about Oasis de los Gatos. And indeed, we will, and hear about you as well. But since the whole topic of feral cats is often misunderstood and dogged, so to speak, by misconceptions and controversy, I'd like to start with you telling us maybe one or two significant facts about feral cats that most of us wouldn't know.
Well, feral cats, of course, are in the wild. They're non-domesticated animals.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically aren't very easy to tame, although I think a person has to have a propensity for taming them. Once they are acquired or trapped, most organizations will trap, neuter, and spay and release, whereas I believe that they can be tamed. During my process, which takes about 3 weeks, as I have said in my book, Taming the Feral Cat, most people do know about feral cats. They are wild, roaming the streets, scrounging off of food that they can find in dumpsters and what have you. Most people stay away from them thinking that they are full of diseases, and of course they aren't. They're not any diseases to humans except toxoplasmosis, which would be only in contact with feces to a pregnant person, human.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, or rabies, but that's very rare unless they come in contact with a dead bat or raccoon.
Okay. Well, yeah, I definitely want to get into all that momentarily. I just thought there might be just sort of a quick tidbit that we wouldn't know about feral cats. But let's actually to establish a backdrop and maybe some context for both Oasis de los Gatos and the Carol Clancy, who has the kind of expertise that we just heard. Maybe we could spend a moment or two on your history. I mean, for example, where did you grow up, and to what extent were animals an important part of your formative years?
Well, I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and I was always in communication with animals, I think, at a very young age. When I discovered a hurt bird or, things like that, I would nurse back to health.
Mm-hmm.
And my father and mother always had animals, dogs, cats, things like that. So I grew up with animals in Oregon, of course. Then as I grew up and got married, I lost contact with animals, and then I acquired them back in my older years. The contact with animals.
I see. And so it sounds like at least your love and your connection for animals was a bit dormant while you were, maybe raising a family or involved with business and other things. Is that kind of what you're...
Yes, that's exactly right. And mm-hmm. when I moved to Arizona, it became open again. I began to realize that animals were a very, very important part of my life. And we formed an organization called CHARM, Cat Hostel and Rescue Movement, and that is kind of basically on its own right now until I formed Oasis de los Gatos in 1996. So then I began to realize that the street cat or the feral cat needed more help than the average domesticated cat.
Sure. Well, tell us, maybe let's take these one at a time. What is CHARM? I mean, that's an acronym, obviously. Maybe you could tell us both what that stands for and what that organization and its objectives were.
Yes, it was formed in 1990. Cat Hostel and Rescue Movement is the name of CHARM, which is kind of clever. We organized that and decided we had great aspirations of cleaning up kind of like the street cats in Phoenix, Arizona, but of course there's so many of them. There's various volunteers that go out and we neuter and spay and release, and then have feeding stations for the cats that are released, which is volunteer organized.
I see. And it wasn't quite clear from the reference you made before. Does CHARM still exist, but you're not just directly involved, or is it sort of no longer exist?
No, CHARM still exists,
okay.
And it is run mainly by volunteers right now. And
mm-hmm.
I did an off-ranch to appear in Apache Junction at Oasis de los Gatos when we formed it in 1999.
Okay, so it was really sort of this interest that maybe was developed through your work at CHARM that led you to forming Oasis de los Gatos.
So. Exactly.
Okay.
That's right, Austin. Uh-huh.
And it's in Apache Junction, Arizona. I mean, why there? Is it just because there was land available, or that's near where you were living otherwise?
Yes, I decided to move out into the country like in an acre and a quarter. These are parcels at Apache Junction that are... amenable to having various horses, cats, dogs that are that you know that that's just better for them out here.
Mm-hmm. And although an acre and a quarter is relatively small, I would say as sanctuaries go, is the idea to expand. I mean, do you have the at least the option to get other parcels that are adjacent to the current?
Yes. There could be availability to the south of us, but right now we're working on expanding. Right now it's like 2,000 square feet under a roof mm-hmm. for our sanctuary right now. So we are looking to expand. Of course, donations are always needed.
Sure, sure. Well, let's take a moment and mention, as we will a few other times, the website. It's Oasis de los Gatos. .org, and you can go to that site and learn a little bit about the sanctuary, but also there's a way to donate and help with the work they're doing. But how many cats live there currently now, Carol?
Well, I like to keep it no more than 50 to 60 cats at a time.
Mm-hmm.
In case one gets ill, I have to euthanize one, or you know, older cats also, you know, the time comes. I had one that lived to be 22, so
wow.
It's not rare. Cats do live a long time.
Yeah.
But I always try to have one space or two left for an unwanted cat. People email me all the time with unwanted cats.
Mm.
Of course, I have to turn them away. You know, I can't do that.
Yeah. Just because of space considerations, or
yeah,
because,
space
yeah.
consideration until
yeah.
I do add on to the sanctuary.
Right.
So, but I do give them full of information, other people to contact
mm-hmm.
for this. So, they're not going unattended. I certainly give them full information on other sites.
And how many? Other sanctuaries are you aware of that are sort of comparable to Oasis de los Gatos?
The only other one I know of is called the Best Friends, of course, Sanctuary in Utah, and
mm-hmm.
that is the largest one of all.
Yeah.
I don't know of any in Arizona, actually, that deals with feral cats. You know, you're dealing with wild animals here, and
right.
Most people do not want to even foster them at all. They just neuter and spay and release.
And how many, that brings me to sort of a question, because I gather that some of the cats that live there, well, obviously, primarily they're feral, but I guess some are tamed that live there as
oh,
well?
Oh, yes. The minute they're trapped and neutered and spayed and checked out health-wise, they are, you know, start in a taming process. And I tame them as far as they want to go. Some cats don't want to be tamed. And so I recognize that, and so then they are released into the sanctuary, and they just tolerate me and my volunteers. You know, they just kind of tolerate humans,
sure.
And they just, what I call, they don't get it. They don't get the idea that humans want to
have a relationship with them.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, and I want to get into the whole taming thing, obviously, in great detail, but... I guess I was also under the impression that some of the cats that live there that maybe aren't or maybe even weren't feral are there maybe because they there's other reasons like medical reasons, behavioral reasons, and that maybe that was like kind of the place for them to go because otherwise they wouldn't have anywhere else to go.
Exactly. I have one cat that was brought to me, beautiful, huge, black. I mean, he's just absolutely gorgeous. And he had scratched and bitten the owner only because he was antagonized by his sibling, and she happened to get in the way. Well, she brought him over to me and wanted me to kind of calm him down. Well, I did, of course, and I asked her if she wanted to have him back, and she said no, so she gives me monthly donations to keep him. But he is just such a woos now. But, yes, there are cats here that have had behavioral problems and also medical problems,
uh-huh.
and they just can't seem to keep them. Some are, you know, a lot of them, believe it or not, are declawed, and, of course, I'm totally against declawing. So.
Sure, sure. All right, let me just quickly remind our listeners that this is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and we're speaking with Carol Clancy from Oasis de los Gatos, the sanctuary in Arizona for feral cats. If you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Carol, who believes at least some feral cats, maybe most, can be tamed. We're going to hear about that in a moment. Please call us at 949-824-5824, or you can if you prefer, you can IM us the AOL Instant Messenger, and the screen name is Talking Animals. So let's get into this whole notion of obtaining feral cats. How does it work exactly? Just sort of blow by blow, kind of take us through how this works.
Okay, the taming of the feral cat starts in the trap. When the trap, I always cover the trap and put it in the car on the seat next to me, and that's when the taming process starts.
Okay, maybe,
eye to eye.
Carol, sorry, maybe we should just back up. I'm sure most listeners probably are aware that just because, you know, generally when feral cats are an issue, people use humane traps and they put, you know, smelly cat food in and try to lure the cat in, but it doesn't hurt the cat. So when they say trap, it's really just sort of a cage with a door that shuts safely behind the cat, and that's how people routinely trap feral cats, just so we establish that from the get-go. So now you've got this cat in that sort of humane trap. Now, sorry, proceed. I just thought I wanted to make that clear to our listeners.
Okay. I usually have kind of a standing appointment with a vet, and of course the vet will know about feral cats. So,
mm-hmm.
And I start right away with the cat, and of course the voice is the most important taming instrument a person can do, and the eyes. Always make eye contact with the feral cat and talk to the cat. Not baby talk, but kind of on their level talk,
mm-hmm.
you know, and talking to them, soothing them. That's very, very important to start right off on taming the feral cat. So once it's vetted, shots, neutered, spayed, release, so forth, I release it into a dog-type crate, and this is what I call it, the crate taming method. It has a food dishes, water dishes, bedding, and so forth, and a litter box in there. Then once it's calmed down and the sedation is worn off and so forth, then I can really start the taming process. But it also, right then, has gotten adjusted to me as a human. So at that point, then, I start my taming process by talking to it. And
what are some of both when you're in that initial phase that you're talking about, how important it is to talk to them, and then now this phase as well? I mean, you said not baby talk, but what are some of the phrases or things that you say that they would find soothing or that they would respond to typically?
Okay, you are beautiful. You are the most beautiful cat I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
What you have to do is build this ego up because it is scared to death of a human.
Mm-hmm.
And its only defense is claws and teeth. So therefore, you have to watch it at all times. Watch its eyes. Watch its position. The whole process, is it turned to the side? Is it turned its head to the back? Of the crate, exactly what position is the cat in. Talking to it and calming it with your voice is, as I said, the most important part.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, oh, you're beautiful, oh, that's just, you know, just talk, rattling on, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not even saying words, but just the hum of the voice.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be a little higher. If it's a man taming him, then he can raise it a couple octaves, if
okay.
possible, because the cat talks. Mainly not very low,
right,
so to speak.
So it's still not baby talk, but it's just a higher pitch or a higher
exactly,
octave or whatever.
Exactly,
yeah, okay.
That's it, yes.
Okay.
And so then if you're really timid and shy and scared and have no fear, then it's easier to tame a feral cat. And you can, there's certain things, as I mentioned in my book, to test the cat to see if it is tameable. And, of course, I always like to start out with a... end of a broom handle, like, you know, 3 feet long with a glove attached to it. And you open the crate very slowly and gently because a cat could jump and run out at this point. So you put the gloved pole over top of the head and it'll slink down. The cat will slink down,
mm-hmm.
but be very scared. And I can always tell if a cat is tameable by if it thumps at the glove. In other words, if it snaps at the glove with the paw and misses it, then I know it's going to be tameable.
Oh, yeah?
Fast.
Versus what would be the other response that would...
It would grab a hold with his teeth and start shaking it.
Okay.
And at this point, I let him let the cat have the glove at this point.
Okay.
To leave in there for a few minutes, and then I retrieve it by sticking the pole up into the middle finger of the glove. And so once it gets a smell of the human and the glove, then it's just about, you know, ready to be tamed. And
so,
it just takes a process. I mean, it's going to take a time
sure.
to do this.
And that glove, just to back up for a sec, Carol, so that glove that you're putting on that kind of broom handle, that's a glove that you've already worn or otherwise kind of put your scent on, for lack of
exactly.
a better phrase?
Yes,
okay.
exactly.
Okay.
So every day this is done, and slowly you take the pull out, and then you reach in with your hand. And you must have, you know, long sleeves. I recommend long sleeves, gloves, and some protective eyewear also. And you know, this is just a normal thing that a tamer does. It's,
yeah.
It's in the book of all the process that, that the tamer has to wear. But this is only for the protection of the tamer. And so, therefore, you always pet from the top of the head down to about the middle of the back. You never go all that far because the cat can turn around then and get you, you know, bite the glove or bite you. Now, some cats really sink their teeth into the glove, so sometimes you have to double pat. But this will go on, talking every single day, building confidence, building the cat's ego, because ego is extremely important to the cat. I mean, this is his life, this is his ego. You know, as I said, cats walk on their own, walk by themselves. They don't need any humans.
Right. So, like, who are you to try to enter my life unless unless I say it's okay, kind of? Is that the
Yeah,
the
that's
thinking?
About it.
Yeah.
And but so, once cats are tamed, they're just, I call them a whole different breed of on their own, because their bonding is so great.
Yeah. Well, now, I'm sure the timetable probably varies from cat to cat, but is there a general rule of thumb by which you can, you know, say, okay, this cat is basically tame?
Oh, yes. When it sits on your lap and purrs, then you've got it.
Okay. And what period of time would that usually span by the
it
time?
It takes time. What I do is, after I tame them, basically to the point where I can pick them up. This is also part of the process, picking them up for a few minutes and then letting them down. Picking them up and then letting them down. And then actually bringing them out of the crate and into your lap. Mm. And then you keep doing that. And then soon after that, then... you can. I put them in what you call different type of. It's called a show cage, and that way they can also socialize with other cats. If a person has other cats, they can then smell noses and recognize other animals around.
Okay, and again, just quickly one more time, remind our listeners, this is Talking Animals on KUCI. We're speaking with Carol Clancy from Oasis de los Gatos, a sanctuary in Arizona for feral cats, and of course. She's talking us through right now her sort of own technique for taming feral cats. So let me ask you this, Carol. Do you find that, and again, if you'd like to join the conversation, by the way, or have a question for Carol about feral cats or taming them, 949-824-5824. So do you find that generally people who, again, either have a preconception about feral cats or even have an encounter through one means or another with feral cats, sort of have an assumption or maybe even if it's a specific instance, conclude sort of too quickly that feral cats, hey, they're just wild, they can't be domesticated, and either wouldn't try or would give up too readily?
Yes, I believe that. I believe that people, as I said, they must have no fear because it takes a certain person to handle a feral cat. They're just not going to be able to handle a feral cat because they do have teeth and claws. I mean, it takes a certain person to decide whether they want to do this or not.
Yeah. And are these, like, for example, I mean, we actually have a cat that, well, was once a feral cat. Had it wandered into our garage a couple years or so ago and just kind of set up shop, and then it was just like wild and crazy. Finally, you know, we trapped her and took her and got her, you know, dewormed, defleed, and everything. But the vet's prediction at that point was like, you know, hey, that's nice that you've done this for this cat, but, I mean, you're really not going to be able to domesticate her. But we tried nonetheless, and now, I mean, and she was quite skittish for a long, long time, and not knowing really your technique, I mean, we tried doing things for a while, and finally, you know, she calmed down a bit more, and now, like I say, probably 2 years later, I mean, she could not be nicer, a sweeter, more loving, more friendly cat, and again, I don't know if that just sort of is an offshoot of what you're recommending. But again, the vet, and you know, it's a really good vet, just said, you know, it's probably not going to happen. They're probably just going to, like, scoot away and go back out on the streets.
Well, you've gained trust. Trust is the most important thing.
Okay.
And once you have gained the trust of that cat, they're yours.
Yeah.
They're yours forever.
Okay.
And they may skittish away from you and tolerate you, but once again, you must have done something to kind of bring out the domestic behavior of this cat, because all cats really want to be domesticated. They really do.
Oh, yeah?
Mainly,
okay.
They do.
Yeah.
As I said, some will tolerate humans because their fear is so great of humans.
Sure.
So this is the main thing, is that their fear.
Yeah. And especially, I guess, depending on what their experience. I mean, you know, this cat that I'm talking about that now lives with us, I'm guessing, I mean, we don't know what her history was. I mean, she was quite young. But, I mean, it's probably a different life that she led, even in her short time before she wandered into our garage that day, than cats that you might often be referring to. Like, I mean, I think of cats, feral cats that live in colonies, for example, as being probably a whole different set of challenges to tame, I would think. I mean, especially after they've been there for a while. I just don't know what your experience is with that. Kara, looks like we might have a call, though. Would you like to take a call from from a listener? Hi, you're on the air a lot. Hi, you're on. Oh. All right, well, maybe they'll call back.
Yes, cats that live in colonies, they have a hierarchy order. You know, as I see it around here, when I'm watching the cats, of course, they'll follow me all over when it's feeding time because I'm the hierarchy.
Sure.
And they choose a cat within their own group that they follow. I noticed that. It's very amazing and amusing, too, to see this.
Mm.
But they do, they follow each other in groups. You know, they say the cats are kind of loners, but they're really not. They just love their groups.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So Carol, I mean, you made a couple of references to it, so I want to be sure that we get this information out about your book. I mean, where is it available, and if someone wanted to buy it, how would one do so?
Okay, they can visit my website at www.oasisdelagatos.org.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, my webmaster is going to be putting it hopefully on today or tomorrow and opening it up and reviewing the contents and so forth. So all they have to do is push the buy button.
Okay, great.
And it's $15.
Okay.
And it's about 62 pages long. It's full instruction
uh-huh.
of how to tame the feral cat. If any organization has a problem with a feral cat.
Yeah.
I get a lot of emails about, you know, how can, please help me. You know, I want to tame this feral cat. How do I go about doing it? So I just recommend my book, which
sure.
is very easy. And it's on its third edition, also has an ISBN number at this point.
Oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Carol, we're just about nearing the end of our time here, but it sounds like those techniques, those principles in the book, you've obviously really tried and kind of refined over a number of years of working with feral cats. It looks like one more call might be coming in. Let's see if we can squeeze that in before
okay.
we have to say goodbye. Hi, you're on the air live on KCI with Carol Clancy from Oasis de los Gatos.
Thank you. I have a question for Carol.
Okay. Please. Great. Thank you.
Hi, Carol. That
Hi.
Sounds like wonderful work you're doing. I was just wondering, have you had a lot of injuries? You seem to talk about the protective clothing, but having encountered a few cats in my lifetime, I just wondered, have you had any problems? And, you know, coming in, I realize I see a vet first, but, you know, something with infection, would that be something normal people would normally be afraid of?
This is why I always recommend in my book, of course, is a tetanus shot for the tamer. All the years I've been taming, I've only had one infection, and that was from a bad mouth feral cat that bit right into my finger. So, and of course, I didn't wear a glove at that time because I trusted the cat. So, unfortunately, that was my mishap. But if you wear protective clothing, you know, thick gloves, I recommended Wells Lamont, which is heavily padded. You shouldn't have any trouble.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you so much for calling. All right, Carol. Well, like I say, we're just probably rounding the towards the end of our time here. But what's on the horizon, would you say, for Oasis de los Gatos? It sounds like you're in the midst of trying to expand the actual facility. And you see either adding other facilities or other elements, and will it, I assume, probably always be limited to cats, I'm guessing, right?
Yes, it'll be limited to feral cats because I want to give them a chance in life. They,
sure.
they run the streets. They don't have a chance.
Yeah.
So that would be my project. It would be to continue to expand on the property.
Sure.
As far as I could go.
Right. And how many other people are there helping out with the cats day to day?
Well, I have at least two other volunteers that come, you know, during feeding time and cleanup and so forth.
Sure.
So that helps.
Yeah. Great. Well, again, as we said before, though, I'm sure if people, again, visited your website, oasisdelosgatos.org, they could, you know, donate if they were inclined. They could find out other ways they could, you know, help support your efforts. And, of course, also buy the book if they wanted to, which, again, it sounds really interesting. I'd actually like to get the book myself. So,
okay.
So Carol, well, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And it sounds like you're really doing great work. And you really kind of obviously developed a sort of a very specific technique that's obviously working.
Okay, Austin. I thank you for having me on.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. Again, Carol Clancy from Oasis de los Gatos, and the website, again, oasisdelosgatos.org. I'm Duncan Strauss, listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Urban 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune, and you know how this works, right? It's name that tune, except it's animal-related, right? So I'll play a snippet. This is like a gimme. This is like Who's Buried in Grant's Tomb. But again, we decided let's give a prize away. We also have tickets to David Allan Coe at the Galaxy on December 18th. So if you are the first one, maybe even the second one, to call in and correctly identify this song, you have your choice of the prizes I mentioned earlier or the tickets or both. What the heck? We're generous. It's the holiday season, right? So it's a Name That Animal tune. Call in 949-824-5824 as soon as you recognize this song.
Three blind mice.
I said it was a gimme, my God.
See how they run. They all ran after the farmer's wife. She cut off their tails with a carving knife. Did you ever see such a sight in your life?
I gotta believe you can name this animal, too. Right? All right. Well, at any point, before we sign off and hand things off to Jeff Scott, call in 949-824-5824, and you have your choice of those prizes. The tickets to David Allan Coe at the Galaxy on December 18th. And we'll get them to you. All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. We have reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, the University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guest, Carol Clancy, for joining us on Talking Animals. One more time, the name of the sanctuary is Oasis de los Gatos. And the website is oasisdelosgatos.org. I also want to thank you all for listening and for the phone call we received. Next Monday, our guest will be Claudia Kozinska, editor-in-chief of The Bark, which is considered the New Yorker of dog magazines. And along with The Bark's creative director, Cameron Rue, is also the editor of Dog Is My Co-Pilot, a terrific anthology of essays, short stories, and commentaries from the likes of Linda Berry, Alice Walker, Rick Bass, and many others, Margaret Cho. I can't even think of those, you know, probably two dozen or so people contributed to this great book. So that book's out now on paperback, so Claudia will be here chatting with us about it and, of course, about The Bark magazine. So hope you'll join us for that on Talking Animals next Monday, December 13th. And, by the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI, talk shows, etc., include, just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which, of course, precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m., we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. My gosh. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like that each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI schedule also is a show called The Dead Air Zone on Monday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. It's truly eclectic, from Afrobeat to Zydeco. That's A to Z, of course. So when you have a chance on Monday night, please check that out. Also, again, I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. And when you get there, please sign up for our email list. We're going to alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also encourage you to email me with comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, animal songs, animal comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and The Blues Disease. It's a great, great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is Chucky Weiss with No Hefcats. Hey, UCI.
Ain't no melody, no more solid beat, no more hearted run if you please. No more gumby chewing, drive me insane. Take me to the movie, well then we wonder why these things are hard to find. Ain't no hip cap anymore, that's why.
And the girl you love most, she's